All right, everyone, welcome back to the We Just Talk Wrestling podcast. Kyle, Dylan, and Christian back at it with another episode continuing the celebration of black and gold with TakeOver San Antonio. Make sure to follow us on all social media platforms. Give us a five-star rating if you could. So, Dylan, what happened in WWE this week?
All right, so before we dive into the weekly shows, there is a news story that broke, I believe, today. So it was under a lot of belief from a lot of media outlets that Brock Lesnar was 100% done with WWE. Now, while that might be true, apparently today, WWE updated their official website, the roster, and Brock's name has been moved from the alumni section to the current roster section of the website. Now, apparently, according to fans, he's also been blacklisted from 2K24. There's no mentions of Brock. Vince was blurred out. So we kind of suspected that that would happen. But today, maybe it means absolutely nothing. But Brock moving from the alumni page to the active roster, what do you guys think? Is there a possibility we get Brock post-WrestleMania? He doesn't fit in now. If he is going to show up, it should be post-Mania. But no. What do you guys think?
No, if I don't think he comes back, and there's absolutely no need for him, in my opinion. I think his days of them needing Brock are done, and they don't need that special attraction anymore just with how deep the roster is and how well NXT's going.
The special attraction is about to be Roman.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Roman's going to be a special attraction. So, yeah, they don't need him. I have no interest in seeing him. I know he gets a big pop whenever he comes back, but I don't think he comes back, and I don't think there's any need for him.
Yeah, I'm still on that same line. I think he's ran his course, and obviously with what he did, both as just a person and a pro wrestling fan, it just doesn't need to be seen again. So he can go off in the sunset and go back to Minnesota for all I care.
Now, I want it to be known that we haven't gotten confirmation of Brock's involvement, if there is any involvement. Obviously, he's been heavily implied, and WWE took their precautions. I side with you guys. While I've enjoyed Brock's more recent run, you know, Cowboy Brock, I've been very vocal about that. I agree. I don't think we need Brock. I don't think we've needed Brock the last couple of years. He hasn't felt super out of place. I enjoyed the Cody feud, and it did what it needed to do. And I'm with you. I think if we just move on, and Roman will eventually be that final boss whenever he does drop his title, we don't need Brock as the special attraction. We're going to have Roman. We still have some other big names that are always lurking. Cena's been dropping hints about being at Mania. So I don't think we need Brock. I think that's fair. But let's move on to Raw here. Walter defeated Dominic Mysterio via submission with the Boston Crab. Pre-match, there was a pretty funny moment between Pat McAfee and Walter. As Walter was making his entrance, he just stared down Pat, and Pat was standing on the announce table saluting him, kind of playing up that a couple weeks ago, Walter was very, very mad at Pat McAfee for doing Jey Uso's dance, and then he asked Walter to smack Dom in the mouth because he hates Dominic Mysterio too. Anyway. Nia Jax defeated Becky Lynch via disqualification after interference from Liv Morgan. CBS, by the way, with a big fumble. It says Alexa Bliss in front of me, but she did not appear on Raw this week. Of Liv Morgan playing up Liv's... You guys have been predicting, or at least Kyle has, adding more people to that Mania match. Nia's lurking. Now you have the whole Liv situation. I would not be shocked if that match turns into a Fatal 4-Way.
Yeah.
I personally don't want to see it. I want it to be a straight one-on-one, but the way it's looking, it would not shock me if they go that route.
And Liv would take the pin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sammy defeated Ivar in singles action with the Helluva kick. Sammy trying to build momentum towards a potential Intercontinental title match. And I'll talk about the Intercontinental title in a second. Andrade made his Raw debut against Raw return. They kept saying debut. Raw return as he defeated Apollo Crews. This was actually not a squash match. I like the fact that Apollo got some offense here. It was a pretty quick match. It was a TV match, obviously. We knew Andrade was going to win. Also, am I the only one confused? I could have sworn Andrade was advertised last week as Andrade El Idolo. This week, he was only referred to as Andrade, but his theme song kept saying El Idolo over and over and over.
Might be a trademark kind of thing that they're still trying to...
Yeah, I mean,
they
remember,
did that with Jay a little bit, so...
Yeah, with the whole Yeet thing.
Yeah,
but also remember when Cody left WWE, he was just known as Cody for like 4 or 5 years until he was able to get the Rhodes name. So
it happened.
Yeah, so yeah. I think the plan is to eventually call him Andrade El Idolo because his theme song mentioned it over and over, so that's pretty cool. The Judgment Day defeated Imperium, Jerry Von DiVinci and Ludwig Kaiser via pinfall. And Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark defeated the team of Katana Chance and Kaden Carter. They also called their shot basically against Damage Control. Damage Control offered them a shot at the titles. They accepted. I'm going to talk a little more about that at the end of the show because there's some other things about the tag titles that are also going on.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Pearce announced that next week on Raw, there will be a gauntlet match to determine who faces Walter for the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania. The competitors will be Sami Zayn, Ricochet, Shinsuke Nakamura, Bronson Reed, JD McDonagh, and Chad Gable. That's going to take up probably an hour of Raw, and I'm all for it.
Yeah.
That's going to be absolutely incredible. Also, I love the fact that they are, again, making the Intercontinental title feel as important as possible. You have six guys vying for one title for a match that's not set to be had for, what, another 3 weeks or so? So I really, really like that. That also gives a couple weeks to build Walter and whoever the winner is of that match. So I think it's really, really cool what they're doing with the IC title picture. We kicked off Raw, however, with Cody Rhodes, and out comes Seth Rollins. And they were just kind of talking about the challenge of The Rock. But this ultimately, as I guess as good as Cody and Seth are on the mic, this was just a glorified advertisement for SmackDown. If I'm being honest, they weren't going to accept the challenge because it was already said that they were going to do it in person. And that's basically what this promo was. While very cool, we got Seth calling The Rock Diarrhea Dwayne. That was a lot of fun. That made me laugh. But it ultimately was The Rock was calling all of Tucson or Glendale crackheads. So
also, apparently, the Diarrhea Dwayne thing was right from the writer, Brian Gerwitz.
Who's apparently writing. Yeah, The Rock's writing.
Apparently that was his line to Diarrhea Dwayne, so Dwayne didn't get his feelings hurt. But go on.
Yeah. Didn't get his feelings
hurt. No, I'm not kidding. Go on.
Anyway, in the main event, Drew McIntyre defeated Jey Uso with a Claymore. And Drew's big thing, by the way, is that he feels like a lot of things are kind of overshadowing what is setting up to be, in his mind, his moment. You know, Seth's involvement with the bloodline and what Cody's doing. Is Drew McIntyre kind of becoming an afterthought of sorts to Seth Rollins? Is that going to ultimately be his downfall? I kind of like the idea that Seth is playing two stories here. And he did get the upper hand on Seth. He hit him with a Claymore again. Drew was the one left standing tall at the end of Raw. Is Seth's involvement with the bloodline stuff getting to him? We can talk about that in a little bit. I want to get to SmackDown real quick. Randy Orton RKO'd the shit out of KSI after the prime. Yeah, KSI took one of the best RKOs I've ever seen a non-competitor take.
Kudos he sold to him. That very well.
Yeah, he also sold that table spot very well too when he was dressed as the Prime bottle. This was off the heels after Logan Paul revealed that Prime will be WWE's first ever mat advertisement, and that set a lot of the wrestling purists over the edge. How dare you ruin the sacred wrestling mat? Here's the thing. This isn't anything new. AEW has been doing mat sponsorships for quite some time. The UFC, who is literally now the sister company of WWE, look at the Octagon. It's flooded with advertisements. While I prefer the clean canvas look, I don't give a fuck. I hope it's not in the middle of the fucking ring. I hope they put it in the corners at least, like everyone else does. But oh well, I can get over it. Anyway,
the new sports presentation, it's just gonna happen.
It's all about advertisements. Yep. I mean, you see it in the NFL all the time.
It's all about money.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just where we're going.
Yeah.
We just have to accept it and move on. Speaking of Randy Orton, though, Randy Orton and Kevin Owens defeated the team of Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. Bobby Lashley also had a match with Karrion Kross that ended in disqualification after AOP attacked Bobby Lashley. The Street Profits B-Fab came out to rescue them, but ultimately it was the Final Testament that was standing tall. I'm really, really loving this story. They have to do some sort of six-man at WrestleMania. They're dragging this out. This could have ended quite a bit ago, if you really think about it. So this has to land on Mania, and I hope it does. Tiffany Stratton defeated Mia Yim via pinfall, just building momentum. They clearly have something planned for her post-Mania. LA Knight smashed a TV with a chair. after AJ Styles said that he's going to put him in his place in a pre-taped vignette. I love the little more unhinged LA Knight. The fact that he's just wandering around with a chair looking for AJ Styles. When that match happens, I feel like that's going to be a banger. I know we all wanted LA Knight versus Logan Paul one-on-one, but if we're going to get LA Knight, AJ Styles one-on-one, I'm not mad about it at all. No. Also, Dragon Lee defeated Angel Garza via pinfall. But there was a big segment on SmackDown. Let's talk about the reason why a lot of people watch SmackDown. It was the Bloodline and Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins.
Shocker.
We knew where this was going. There was no way in hell that Cody and Seth weren't going to accept the match. I like the fact that it was Seth himself who accepted the match. I thought that was a bit of a, I don't think twist is the right word here, but it was Seth who accepted it. The Rock also played up the fact that he is both Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes' boss, and also now added another stipulation that if Cody Rhodes does not beat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, he will never get a shot at that title again.
Well, there's your winner.
Cody's fucking winning the title, clearly.
There's your winner.
Yep.
They
gave that one away. It's
good.
I'm not mad about it. I don't care. I was literally telling Chloe today, I was like, they could tell me verbatim what's going to happen at WrestleMania between Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, and I'm still going to fucking watch it. I still have to see the moment, and we're all going to cheer when the moment happens. But, a lot of people took to Twitter saying that this kind of ruins the main event of WrestleMania. I don't think it necessarily ruins it. I still think it's going to be entertaining. Remember, Cody had a similar story in AEW, and it went in an opposite direction. I don't see that happening twice, but just saying, you never know.
I think we know.
So, it is now officially set. Night one's main event will be The Rock and Roman Reigns taking on the team of Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes. If the team of Rollins and Rhodes wins, then night two's main event is a straight-up one-on-one match between Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. If The Rock and Roman Reigns win, then night two's main event will be contested under Bloodline rules, which means anything goes, no disqualifications. Guys, WrestleMania is shaping up where the puzzle pieces are coming together. They're starting to assign matches to different days. We know the night one main event, the night two main event. We know both women's matches, potentially. Might be more people added to the Rhea match. But I really, really liked what WWE did this week. They're building. They're continuing to build towards their biggest show of the year. And other companies just kind of wing it. So.
One thing I like too is not every TV match is going to be a banger. Sometimes you do have the comedic matches. Sometimes you have shorter matches. Sometimes you know 8 minutes or so. But there's with Triple H's WWE now, there's always something next, something that falls at something else with the story. Just a little Easter egg. Corey Graves had a commentary that Mia Yim hasn't forgotten about the OC, even though they supposedly broke up. So. There's something for her to do maybe after Mania. There's a backstage segment with Candice LeRae potentially going heel now. She cut a really backstage promo on Maxine in Ivy Nile. I really enjoyed that. Maybe my favorite thing of the week, though. Did you guys see the Bayley vignette or, backstage thing with Kayla Braxton?
Yeah.
What did they pan to right after that? They panned to Naomi and Bianca, and Bianca was like, you shouldn't feel bad for Bayley. Look what she did to me. Look what she did here. And Naomi was like, no, I don't know. I was in a group before. I know what it can do. So it's teasing that Naomi's going to help Bayley. And I think that's your Mania match. I think EO versus Bayley. And I think a six-woman tag between Naomi, Jade, and Bianca versus Damage Control is pretty much set. I think that's the Mania match.
Mm.
But what do you think about that, Christian? That that potential six-woman Mania match. And it would protect Jade a little bit.
Yeah, it would protect Jade because she wouldn't have to be in there the full time. Because
yeah.
We've talked about for a while on this show how when Jade was in AEW, she was doing five-minute matches.
Yeah.
So how much could we have expected her to do in a one-on-one match that would go 15, 20 minutes? Yeah, I get it. She's been training, getting her cardio down. She'd probably be okay, but in a six woman, she don't have to do that much.
And remember, they did a couple weeks ago, they did a stare down between Jade and EO.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, and then, you know, with the history with Bianca, and then Naomi did a, I think it was like the SmackDown Lowdown, or whatever. She did a little thing with Damage Control. Naomi did. Yeah. So everything makes sense, and I love it.
Yeah.
See it. Also, the IC title match is the number one contenders match. It's just going to be a banger. I saw some people say that it should have been a ladder match of night one, night two, and then night two winner faces Walter. Only thing of that they're just playing it safe. They want to do it now, get it out of the way so they can build a story between Walter and whoever wins. I get it. I just feel like Gable's going to win. I think that this is what it's leading to.
I do too.
I don't know what Zayn does, though. I think there's still potential he could maybe get added to the Drew-Seth match. I think there's still maybe a possibility there. But Zayn's going to be on this card.
How do Sammy's winning. That?
No, Gable's got to win.
Yeah, Sammy's winning. You can have Gable do something on the card.
Or do you have Zayn and Gable as the last two and then Walter interferes and then you have a triple threat? Gable's going to be in that match no matter what. I mean, they have not made all of this to come down to just him losing, him not being there. He's going to be in that match.
I think so too. But see, here's the thing about the Sami Zayn thing with the world title. How do you get there with that?
Yeah, see, that's my thought. Also, another thing, speaking of WrestleMania, I forgot to mention this during my rundown. Jey Uso lost mostly because of a distraction from Jimmy Uso. So there's another match that's hasn't been made night official too, right? yet.
Yep.
I think so. It's either got to open night two or...
Open night one.
No, I think it opens night one because I think Seth and Drew are going to open night two.
Okay.
And you're going to do night two bookended by both world titles. That's what I would do.
And remember, they're also teasing a little bit of a tag team announcement with, I remember, Dunn and Bate kind of got a little announcement out of, I almost called him Magnus, out of Nick Aldis. So they're probably splitting those titles soon. So
I could see it.
So, and also interesting, before we move on, did you guys notice there was no Truth in Miz, and they were kind of playing Judgment Day as a babyface team. They got a very big babyface reaction against Imperium, which was a banger of a match, by the way. Triple H is really making me guessing what they're going to do here, so we'll just have to wait and see.
I think, to be honest, before we move on, I think this is just Triple H tying up loose ends. Judgment Day and Imperium have crossed paths in the past.
Yeah.
And instead of leaving that thing unsatisfied, it's very much like Triple H to just not leave things like that. So I think that closes the book on Imperium. I do see the possibility that maybe night one you have some sort of four-team invitational for whatever the new tag title is going to be for whichever brand. I guess that'd be SmackDown since Judgment Day's on Raw. I can totally see that. And I still think we get Judgment Day and Awesome Truth. I think that's the only way that story ends. So I wouldn't look too much into the fact that R-Truth and The Miz weren't here this week. They will be heavily featured, I think, the next 3 weeks.
Also, Nia and Becky actually had a pretty good match, I thought.
Nia's great. I don't care what Christian says.
Yeah, dude, she's rolling.
I'm on the hype train, and like I said, I would not be mad if she got added to that match. It makes sense. Why not?
If she gets added, you got to add Liv, too.
Might as well.
You kind of have to.
Because you can't add anyone to Bayley and EO. That story needs to be just them. But I don't think there's necessarily a true one-on-one story with Rhea. Honestly, her overcoming three people, I think, would
she,
be crucial.
She has to win no matter what. So
yes,
her pinning Liv and protecting Nia and Becky is probably the way to go.
Yeah, because then you could probably do Rhea and Becky at
SummerSlam.
No, Backlash is in France. Literally, the next pay-per-view.
They could do that. I think they're setting up Bianca and Rhea for next year.
Maybe.
Yeah, or I think Bianca, that's one they're big.
Rhea and Jay.
Yeah, that's a big one too. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. WWE was very entertaining this week. I thought they had a great week.
Yep.
But let's move on to AEW. Mm-hmm. So I did not know that we were going to, you know, do – so we were supposed to record on Friday. So actually, I only took notes for Dynamite. If I can find notes for the others, I don't think I missed much, though, to be honest. So let's just talk about Dynamite. Swerve Strickland and Samoa Joe defeated Taven and Bennett, basically in a squash match that Swerve wrestled the whole time. Quite the way to treat your tag team champions, or your ROH tag team champions there. Hook defeated Brian Cage to retain the FTW title. Not advertised as a DQ match, but they used weapons. But overall, still a pretty good match, I thought. Mm-hmm. Riho defeated Chris Statlander. Will Ospreay beat Kyle Fletcher? Absolute banger of a main event. But the big news coming out of the week was the Young Bucks cutting a promo, which was interrupted by Eddie Kingston, then Kazuchika Okada, which got a solid pop, but Okada ending up joining the Elite and turning heel, which was a fantastic decision, I thought, to cap off the night. Up and down show, we also got, there was a pay-per-view right before that, Revolution, a lot of stuff coming out from that. Obviously, the Darby spot, the Sting match, Ospreay, Takeshka, probably your match of the year so far. People were saying it was a perfect show. I did not believe that. I thought the women's match was pretty disappointing. The eight-man match didn't need to happen. I thought Garcia and Christian was pretty underwhelming too, but I still thought it was like a 7 out of 10 pay-per-view, maybe 6.8, something like that. But quickly, a quick news story. There's another AEW contract expiring, and that is Matt Hardy. So starting with Dylan, do you think there's any value with Matt Hardy going to another promotion? Because I would be shocked if he stays with AEW. I do think he would add a lot of value to a writing team. But Dylan, where does Matt Hardy go, and does he wrestle?
I don't think he wrestles. You got to think the Hardys are getting up there, and the way their wrestling style, obviously Matt, not as much of a daredevil as Jeff. So you'd like to think that maybe there's more miles to go for him. Mm. But honestly, Matt has always had a pretty creative mind. I would not be against him being a writer or part of a creative team or a backstage producer of some kind, whether it be in WWE, whether it even be for AEW, although I don't think he sticks around even in a non-wrestling capacity. I could see TNA. If he does want to do any work with Tony Khan, I could see maybe Ring of Honor trying to build that brand up a little bit, but I don't see him wrestling at all. Also, speaking of news, I can't believe we haven't talked about this in a couple weeks, and maybe it's my fault. Shawn Spears is in WWE now. Yeah, and he's actually Shawn Spears.
Yeah, so, he'll be on the main roster soon.
Yeah, I think this track through NXT is going to be fruitful for him. Would not be shocked if maybe they give him a quick title run. I think he'll be down there longer than you think, but yeah, he'll be on the main roster.
I think 6 months max. He'll be on the main roster. Good.
He never won the NXT title. Why not give him one at least a quick run? Maybe he doesn't. He's not the one.
Yeah, he can't be dragged.
But he could but be Trick be... Williams.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Who might be the one to beat Dragon off, whether we like it or not.
I don't know how to phrase this, but Dylan, what do you think of the Darby Allin Revolution spot?
I could see why CM Punk doesn't want real glass.
It didn't add to the match, and the crowd felt very uncomfortable.
It felt unnecessary.
It didn't need it. The match was still decent without it.
No. Match was incredible without it. I
thought it was
I don't know. I know Christian's a big fan of hardcore stuff, and I'm sure he probably loved it. And I'm not saying that the visual of it wasn't, oh my God, wow. That's clearly what they wanted out of it. They wanted us to talk about it. Do I feel it was 100% necessary? No. I mean, did you look at his back? afterwards.
It was just unnecessary, man. It just didn't need to happen. I'm all for extreme spots, but.
Yeah, me too, but.
And also, another thing, he was never going to hit Nick Jackson.
No.
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 That was never going to happen. So the spot was basically meaningless. He just wanted to do it.
Which, I mean, good for him if that's what he wanted to do, and he seemed happy with it. And obviously, he was on Dynamite this week, or he's on AEW TV this week, so yeah. He's okay, thank God.
He's gonna be taking time off. He's
he's going to Mount Everest. Mm-hmm. He's already saying his goodbyes in case he dies. I mean, Darby's just a lunatic, in all the good ways. I mean that with respect. So it doesn't shock me that he did that spot.
Yeah, absolutely. Christian, any thoughts before we move on?
Well, I love the Darby Allin spot. That was insane. That was epic. That tickled every right part of me.
All right, it's time to move on.
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah.
Before I have to start going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Yeah, I think coming out, maybe it was more about Darby doing the spot than it was about Sting itself. That's why I didn't really care for it.
I think it was one of those, like, this is for you, Sting moments.
He couldn't have done that through a table.
He did tell fair. He did tell Sting that he would potentially kill himself for him. So,
yeah, maybe Dylan will do the spot one day. But who knows? But let's move on. This is the moment that we've kind of all been waiting for.
That's the highlight of the show.
So since Christian lost the trivia segment last week, he had to review the May 21st, 2018 edition of Monday Night Raw. And there's actually one segment that I kind of pieced together that happened. And oh my God, Dylan, you're going to remember this. But why don't you get into it?
All right. So, top of the show, we were supposed to have the contract signing for the Raw Women's title between champion Nia Jax and challenger Ronda Rousey. Before anything could get started, Roman Reigns interrupts. Oh, by the way, Stephanie McMahon was the one conducting this. Just put that out there. But Roman Reigns interrupts it, comes out, bashes Vince right in front of Stephanie, saying, you know, how he chooses favorites and all that. And out comes Kevin Owens to tell Roman basically quit being a crybaby bitch. That's what he said, actually. And it led to them having a one-on-one match, which was won by Roman Reigns by disqualification after interference by Jinder Mahal, who came out and beat down Roman. So then Seth Rollins comes out, and he attacks Jinder. And guess what this led to?
What, a tag team match?
A tag team match.
Playa.
the team of Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns defeated Jinder Mahal and Kevin Owens in tag team action.
Oh, my God.
By the way, I just want to clarify, the pay-per-view they were on the road to at this time was Money in the Bank. So just keep that in the back of your guys' mind.
Okay.
So we had a Sami Zayn segment.
Oh, my God, dude.
And he brings out Bobby Lashley's sisters, which, if you guys don't know, it's just a bunch of African-American men in blonde wigs. And he comes out and he starts asking these so-called sisters about all of Bobby's wrongdoings. And then Bobby Lashley comes out and kind of just looks at Sammy and says, wow, good job. You got me. End of segment.
Dude, one of them was Max Caster.
One of them was Max Caster. That's right.
Dylan, do you remember this segment?
Unfortunately, now I do. I think I blocked it out.
What a banger of a segment. I'll tell you what.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Let's move on. Ember Moon defeated Alexa Bliss in singles action. Baron Corbin defeated No Way Jose, continuing a feud, I guess. There were some random feuds on here. We had a tag team feud between two mid-card tag teams. The B team, which was Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, defeated Breezango, which was Tyler Breeze and Fandango in tag team action. And then we had the actual contract signing between Nia Jax and Ronda Rousey. This ended the way that every WWE contract signing ends.
Yes.
Ronda Rousey went through the table, though. Dolph Ziggler defeated Chad Gable with Drew McIntyre at ringside. Apparently them two were feuding, I guess. We had
they were a tag team at one point. They split up.
Yeah, that's right. We had a Money in the Bank qualifier match between Natalya, Dana Brooke, Liv Morgan, and Sarah Logan, with Natalya making Sarah Logan submit. Elias defeated Bobby Roode in singles action.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
And in the main event, we had a very underwhelming match with Braun Strowman defeating Finn Balor to cap off Monday Night Raw in 2018.
What would you give it, like, an honest, like, out of 10?
5.5.
Was it? Sounds like more of a 1, but that's pretty generous.
The tag team match between Rollins, Reigns, and all of them was actually pretty decent, and Roman and Kevin Owens were having a solid one-on-one before Jinder Mahal got involved. Everything else just kind of...
What about the sisters?
Best segment of the night.
Yeah.
Oh, was that the debut of the That's My Life Bailey thing or whatever they called it?
I didn't catch it on the show, no.
Okay. That must have been a couple weeks prior.
Yeah.
But that was when Alexa Bliss and Bailey were feuding, and there was like a whole like vignette of like basically telling Bailey that she's trash and her ex-boyfriend was on there, and it was so bad, dude. Cringy, awful. So, glad that wasn't on that show, but
by the way, I don't think any match besides the Roman match and the tag team match went over 12 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds about right for WWE 218. But we are going to move on here. Are you guys ready for the indies?
Yep.
Yes.
All right, so this week I'll be highlighting Core Pro Wrestling based out of Sand Springs, Oklahoma. Talking about some of the action starting when Tyler Midas beat Tommy Dean. Skylar Slice defeated London Dior to retain the CPW women's title. Merck retained the CPW heavyweight title against Mr. Nasty. And the Canadian Rev Devils won the CPW tag team titles against Red James and Sean Ryan to cap off a very fun night of action. My MVP goes to London Dior, someone I'm new to, but she is a great athlete, very smooth in the ring, it has so much potential, so go check out Core Pro Wrestling on YouTube.
Awesome stuff. We'll be sure to tag both the promotion and Kyle's MVP on social media like we do every single week, so you guys give them a like and a follow. And if there's any wrestlers or promotions that you would like Kyle to do a deep dive into for his indie segment, please send those suggestions our way.
Alrighty. Superstar Spotlight, Dylan. What do you got?
Alright, my Superstar Spotlight this week goes to Brian Keith. So as of now, Brian Keith is signed to AEW. He started training back in 2013 as part of Booker T's Reality of Wrestling School and promotion. He shortly made his television debut not too long after, in July of 2013. He worked as a trainer for ROW as well up until he left the promotion. And since then, it's kind of bounced around the indies a little bit. He's seemingly won a title in practically every promotion that he has wrestled for. It seems like he's the current Deadlock Pro Wrestling National Champion and recently made his AEW debut in a losing effort to Orange Cassidy. However, in February, Tony Khan did confirm that Brian Keith has signed a contract with AEW. Like I said, this guy seemingly wins everywhere he goes. Let's hope that stays the same in AEW or even in Ring of Honor, where it's said that he's going to be doing quite a bit of work as well. So Brian Keith is my spotlight this week.
All right. I love the bounty hunter, but go on, Christian. What do you got?
All right. This week, mine goes to a WWE superstar that's really been catching my eye lately, and that is one Santos Escobar. This guy, ever since turning a heel, has really caught my eye just based on how he can sell. I guess this would be considered a lower card story, the stuff with Carlito, Ray, and all that. He can seems like he can make anything feel like a main event type feud, and hey, maybe given the chance, maybe we'll talk about him more during Money in the Bank season. I think he's pretty solid in ring. He's obviously got great character work. And he's become one of my favorites recently in this recent run he's done.
Yeah, I'd love for him to win Money in the Bank. I definitely think he's going to be in the match, for sure.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
So, yeah, if they put him in and have him win, all for it.
Yeah.
But mine this week goes to CMLL's Mystico, who has also made some AEW appearances. Formerly known as Sin Cara in WWE, he has been quite on the run lately. Mystico has won 5 matches in the last week. He won the MLW World Middleweight title against Rocky Romero. He's the current World Historic Middleweight Champion. And he has been the champion for 2,029 days. Mystico is super quick.
Take that,
quick.
Roman Reigns.
Exactly. Super quick and agile in the ring. Super fun to watch. So I wanted to give him a shine to CMLL's Mystico.
How many years is that? Like 8?
No, I say 1, 2, like 6, almost 6,
yeah,
maybe?
Like 6.
I think it's like 5 and something, maybe so.
Because Bruno was over 8.5, and he was at 2,800.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's, hey, that's quite the reign, though.
We
so.
Should get our Roman Reigns, Mystico, winner take all.
Winner take
it.
All.
Do it. And Mystico goes over, brother.
He'll just botch another 20 times.
We all know Roman would beat anybody right now.
Look, Mystico's a great wrestler. That's the original Sin Cara, right? But
this is the good one.
This isn't the original Sin Cara? Because the original Sin Cara was Mystico.
Was
at
it?
Least pre-WWE.
You might be right. I don't know.
Anyway,
actually.
The original Sin Cara, I lost a ton of respect for when he fucking called off a match for breaking his finger.
Hey, he's on quite the run, though. If it is the one we're talking about, he's
I've
on
got,
quite the run.
I've got 2 broken fingers right now. Here I am on my show. I'll show up to work. Anyway, let's move on.
All right, almost
yeah,
not
because
though.
We know you're a pro wrestler and you're joking.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. Yeah, dude, I'm in the community. I'm in the
yeah,
community.
He went through,
I'm an analyst.
He went through glass the day after Darby did. But all right, everyone. It is now time for the Celebration of Black and Gold, the greatest pro wrestling brand in the industry's history, in my opinion, back with TakeOver San Antonio, which took place January 28th, 2017 at the Freedman Coliseum. This is the 13th edition of TakeOver. We're flying through the series. But let's talk about how we got here. Eric Young helped Sanity beat Rich Swann and No Way Jose in tag action, as he introduced Killian Dane as the new member after Madman Fulton was released from WWE, had a singles match against Ty Dillinger, which ended a DQ after the group got involved. Remember, Young attacked Ty before TakeOver Toronto, so this has been brewing for a while. On January 18th, EY proposed Ty to join Sanity, but obviously turned down. This has been brewing for months, like I said. Can the Perfect 10 get his revenge, or will EY continue to lead Sanity to the top? Andrade Cien Almas got multiple victories as he called out another wrestler who's been taking the spotlight recently. And that is Roderick Strong. Roddy defeated Steve Cutler and was beat down in the back by Andrade. Both guys desperately need a win to stay in the title hunt. Both feel overlooked on a stacked roster. Strong or Cien Almas, who will get a big takeover win as their destiny awaits them at the top of NXT. On December 7th, following the tag team title win, DIY had their celebration promo, but the Dusty Rhodes Classic winners, AOP, setting their sights on the tag team titles. DIY beat the team of Tajiri and Akira Tozawa in tag action. They also beat the Revival. However, DIY beat the former champs. AOP jumped them from behind. DIY sent the challenge, which was accepted by the heels. Can AOP conclude their hot start with the tag team gold, or will DIY continue their Cinderella story with arguably their biggest win yet? Asuka beat Nicole Matthews in singles action. Weeks later, had a backstage segment, which was interrupted by Nikki Cross staring at her title. Billie Kay defeated Sonya Deville thanks to Peyton Royce. After the match, they both call out Asuka. Cross continues to stalk the champ, so the Empress has to stack the deck stacked against her. On January 11th, the Iconics jump to Asuka, making this personal as Cross makes the save only to blindside the champ. Can Asuka continue the story of Defying the Odds, or will one of the 3 challengers make history?
On December 7th, Shinsuke Nakamura defeated Samoa Joe in Osaka, Japan to win the NXT title as Joe got called up to the main roster. On Top of the World, the King of Strong Style needed a new but worthy challenger. After defeating Oney Lorcan and winning a number one contender's Fatal 4-Way, Bobby Roode has been the hottest wrestler in the brand, maybe the world at this point. Remember back at TakeOver Dallas, way before when? Remember when Nakamura and Zayn had their classic? It was Bobby Roode who was ringside with the ticket. So this had some long-term storytelling here. Roode said Nakamura isn't worth his time, but you can tell Shinsuke knows he's in for a fight. Can Bobby Roode make the NXT title glorious, or will the King of Strong Style continue to dominate NXT? Here's three matches you want to watch from the weekly shows. TM61 versus The Revival on January 18th. Liv Morgan versus Ember Moon January 25th. Andrade versus Oney Lorcan on January 11th. The official theme song is Monster by Starset. And 411 Mania gave the event a 9 out of 10. So let's see if we agree there. Are you guys ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's get into it. Ty Dillinger versus Eric Young. Dillinger in this perfect 10 gimmick is stupid over, as Eric Young's presentation is top-notch. Also, before we start, please welcome Percy Watson to the commentary desk, as this will be Corey Graves' last takeover as he officially goes up to Raw. He's been doing both, but he'll full-time do Raw at this point. EY gives Ty one more chance to take the jack and join Sanity. Love the quick storytelling here. Quick lariat by the Perfect 10. Dillinger avoids getting taken out by Sanity, as the story here is that Ty needs to stay in the ring and avoid the big guys on the outside. Young takes thumb to the eye as Dane connects with a flying crossbody. EY connects with an elbow drop to the back of the neck, which was nasty. That rear choke from the second rope was awesome. And this character, Young, wrestles a very slow but physical style as he connects with a neck breaker. Ty reverses with a chomps in the corner. EY goes for another elbow drop, but eats a beautiful drop kick. Slugfest in the middle, as a win means so much to these guys, as Dillinger eats a brutal forearm. Here comes the Perfect 10, exploding with the offense. Top row belly to belly as we're heating up. Wolf tries to get involved, eats a tiebreaker. Dane eats a super kick, but EY hits a forearm to the back of the neck. A tiebreaker, but Wolf puts EY's foot on the rope, breaking up the pinfall there. But they see Ty flying through the sky on top of both of them. Young hits an incredible inverted neck breaker. 1, 2, 3, and Eric Young gets the victory. This whole match was trying to legitimize Sanity as a threat, and Dillinger trying to overcome the odds, but in the end, the numbers game cost him, like Graves said on commentary. Early on, they really focused on Young showcasing some of his offense and the overall story, but then the match started heating up a little bit towards the end, or towards the middle to the end. The what is next story Dillinger had going on was great, as Sanity looks like giant threats and they really wanted to get that over in this match. This match was not a 5-star match, but they wanted to tell multiple stories and get Sanity over, and I thought they did that very well. Dillinger, even though losing effort, still looked pretty good, and he's still red hot with the crowd. I think it checked every box for me. What'd you think, Christian?
Yeah, first off, I'd like to talk about Eric Young's presentation. Talk about making a guy feel important.
Mm-hmm.
At first, when he came out, before I heard the announcement, I thought it was Aleister Black. I'm not joking. I was like, Aleister Black's already in WWE? But no, it was Eric Young.
We're getting Aleister Black.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Who I've watched Eric Young for years upon years to this point. I mean, he was in TNA, and now he's back in TNA after being buried alive. That's still not making
sense. Yeah, they shanked him to death, didn't they?
Yep.
Yeah, and then they buried him. Anyway.
Yeah, that's a story for a different day. Yep.
But I like how the match started with the whole offering the jacket, basically saying, look, this is your last chance, or I'm going to beat you down type thing. And Dillinger just kind of slaps him and says, well, there's your answer. I'm not doing it. I thought, yeah, the match checked every box as far as storytelling goes. It wasn't a pro wrestling clinic, but from a storytelling aspect, I think everything makes sense here. Just from what I've seen on the TakeOver, I think the right winner won, so not a whole lot to complain about.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever intended to be a five-star classic, but they, like I said, I thought they checked every box. But Dylan, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought the story obviously carried it here, like you guys said. This wasn't an instant classic, and I don't think it was destined to be one. I thought the match itself was fine, but again, this was about making Sanity look like a true threat, and that succeeded. So a lot of my score is going towards the story being told itself. Also, there was history.
Great story.
Yeah, there was also history here. I'm pretty sure commentary mentioned it. That Dillinger and Young, they've dated back to like 15 years prior wrestling on the indies together. So there was a bit of a, not necessarily a pre-existing story, but these two have crossed paths in the past. And I like that there was at least somewhat of a brief mention of that. But yeah, I thought this checked all the boxes. Didn't set the world on fire as an opening match, but I thought the story told was fine. It was
and cool. the crowd was fantastic during this. I thought Eric Young got a lot of heel heat.
I thought they were fantastic on that.
Also, you know what they're doing? Obviously, Ty Dillinger at this point is a glorified jobber. But what I like what they do with him is they have him win during like the middle point, like through the weekly. They have him really look strong until then he makes the next person look strong. You got to have a guy like that. So,
yeah,
especially at this
Dolph
time,
Ziggler,
you know,
did that for years.
Exactly. You got to have a guy like that because, you know, there's always a spot for him to make, you know, unfortunately, other people look good but him in the process. But, yeah, I really like Dillinger in this role, and you're going to keep seeing him potentially in this role for some time. But, Dylan, we'll start with you. Would you give a grid out 5?
Yeah, so one quick thought. I probably would have made this match 2, considering what match 2 was. But anyway, I went – you're going to hate me. I'm at 2.7, maybe 2.75. 2.75.
I give it a 3.2. What did you give it, Christian?
I gave it a 3 for mainly the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we move on. I'm in the middle of you guys, pretty much.
So we move on. Andrade Cien Almas versus Roderick Strong. Both guys desperately needed a win. A big jaw kick by Roddy as these two were even. Chop into a backbreaker, hard hitting early as Andrade hits a loud chop and smack to the face. Top rope arm breaker as Almas is working on the left arm. Running kick to the face as the arm bar is locked in deep. Very good strategy by Andrade here early. Isolated arm power slam by Andrade. Goes for a double moonsault, but gets thrown down by Roddy. Lariat gore buster into a perfect drop kick. Low backbreaker, as you can see how much this means to these guys. Sliding German reversal by Andrade. Cien Almas power slams Roddy with one arm. These two were chopping the hell out of each other. Dude, Roddy's arm on that stretch, it's just great stuff here early. These two slug at the top of the rope, slams Andrade back first on top of the turnbuckle, but hip tosses Roddy into the corner inside out lariat. Andrade hits the double knees, rising knee by Strong. Reverse back slam, sit kick as Roddy gets the win here. I really don't know what the crowd's issue was. I really enjoyed this match. Physicality was on full display, but it was also even as both guys got a ton of offense in. The purpose of this match was to showcase for each of them, and I think Roddy getting the win on his first takeover is a sign of things to come. Momentum is key. Roddy getting the much-needed steam as his mission to get to the NXT title. But I thought this match was borderline pretty fantastic, I thought, and a great way to follow the opener. We'll start with you, Christian. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, these were just two true pro wrestlers just going at it for what, 15 minutes?
I think it was 10. I think it was 10.
It was about 13.
Was it?
Okay.
Was 13?
Are you talking bell-to-bell or entrances?
No, bell to bell, 13 minutes.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I overshot it, but still. that's pretty impressive because even if it was 15 minutes, it didn't feel that long. But, I mean, it just shows you how quick they worked, though.
Yeah.
And how fluent they were. I mean, both guys were really fluent here in this match. And I'm kind of on Dylan's side. Would prefer if this would have opened. I understand why the other match opened. But 2 is more for the cooldown spot, and I felt like the Ty Dillinger match would have been a better 2 than this one would have been.
And it had the Dillinger match had a better story going in. That's why they put it at 1, and I get it.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
But if you want a pure action match that's going to get the fans into it, I think this was the one. This was really solid all the way through, all things considered. Wasn't perfect, but I still really enjoyed it.
Yep. What'd you think, Don?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a fan of no disrespect to the opening match, but I'm just a fan of good wrestling matches kicking off my card. That's why I said this should have kicked off. This was a lot of fun. The fact that it went 13 minutes, I would have seen them. I would have been happy to see them go another 13 minutes, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I thought this was a lot of good stuff here. I don't think there was enough heat, though. I think that's probably my biggest critique is like Kyle said, the story of the opening match was better. I felt like given maybe a little more time to build a story, this could have been even better.
I think it was only a month and a half from the last take. I think they only had like six shows until the next takeover.
Yeah, so, and it's not like these two interacted all six shows. So,
no.
Yeah, it was a rather quick turnaround, which happens. That's kind of my only critique here. I wish there would have been more heat between these two. But overall, I mean, as far as just a pure wrestling match is concerned, you can't complain too terribly much. I thought it was really good.
Christian, you start with a grading here.
I went with a 4.
I also went 4. Don't you
go? Yeah, I'm at a 3.9.
Yeah, so we're all around the same. And a fantastic match. As we get into the third match here, DIY put their NXT tag team titles on the line against the Authors of Pain. DIY have revenge in their eyes as AOP goes right after them. Ciampa gets chopped down by Rezar, tagged to Johnny as a loud Johnny Wrestling chant from the crowd. Slugfest in the middle of the ring, but again, AOP have an answer. Super kick, high knee combo as Johnny flies on the outside multiple times as Ciampa drops a flying knee on the outside of his own. Johnny tries to fight off both members of AOP as Akam carries Gargano into the ring and drops him hard on his back, keeping the speedy Johnny Wrestling in the corner as Paul Ellering is giving direction. Loved it. Delayed punches to the face, corner stomps, frequent tags by the champions keep the attack going. Reverse torture rack, a step-up kick by Johnny, side slam, kick to the face combo was sick by the challengers. Akam runs into the steps and the post, tagged a Ciampa, flying forearm, multiple knees, and clotheslines in the corner, multiple German suplexes to AOP, and we are red hot. Precision knee to the face for a near fall. Akam survives a kick and slaps to the face as he delivers an inside-out lariat to Ciampa. And these dudes, AOP, are growing before our eyes in this match. Double through the rope spear for a near fall. Johnny gets thrown to the side for a neckbreaker. Set out powerbomb combo. Only got a 2 count by the challengers. Super kick by Johnny. Snap arm bar followed by their Gargano escape. As Rezar throws Gargano into Ciampa with one arm. This is an awesome chance by the crowd. These four exchange forearms on their knees. Super kick, high knee reverse into the super collider. Last chapter, 1, 2, 3. And shockingly enough, the Authors of Pain win the NXT tag team titles from DIY. This was absolutely the best Authors of Pain match that you'd see at this time. And honestly, it's probably one of the better AOP matches that you'll see. Loved how they looked strong, but they also looked vulnerable at points and added layers to them as characters. Ellering had a plan as his guys followed it every step of the way. DIY right now is on another level as they gave somewhat of a banger to a new team, I thought. A lot of great spots, but DIY got a ton of offense in here. The only bad thing is this was a lose-lose situation. AOP, I don't think, could lose because of how dominant they were. But DIY just won the titles. They're red hot with the crowd. So they went with the risk here because they knew DIY would still be over as probably the Authors of Pain would kind of go back to doing something. So I think giving them the titles is probably the right call. Especially the last 5 to 7 minutes, they really got good. As the decision does make sense to me, as Triple H took the massive risk, Dylan, did it pay off as they really tried to make two new stars? And I thought it worked. I thought they looked like massive stars coming out, Dylan.
It worked. I'm not a crazy fan of it being at the expense of DIY, like you said. they had just won the titles, and with the quick turnaround between takeovers, what are we? This was a
six week reign, or something like that.
Yeah. So, but like you said, I mean, there's no other way you could have gone. I would have loved if DIY would have won, but it would have hindered the momentum that they were building with AOP, who they clearly have massive plans for.
And
at least at least at this point. And then on the flip side, you know, AOP getting the big win. Well, now you just made DIY seem like transitional champions after the big underdog story and everything like that. All that considered, though, the match itself was very, very enjoyable. Yeah. Was it the 5-star banger that we saw at the previous takeover?
No.
No. And I think we've been spoiled for a little bit with NXT's tag division the last couple takeovers that even a match that's going to be in the mid to high threes is still like, damn, you know?
Yeah.
This was still a fine match. And also AOP going 15 minutes. They hadn't done that at this point yet,
no,
to my knowledge. So they were taken to the deep end. And like Kyle said, we saw legitimate growth in the match. And you don't see that often. This was the AOP that I wish we would have gotten for years and years to come. Obviously we know what happened, and I hope with the new resurgence that we get this AOP back, because they were in top form here. Great stuff.
What'd you think, Christian, of the match?
Yeah, I do agree that it was a lose-lose situation. I mean, DIY is arguably, from what I remember at this time in WWE at least, probably the biggest tag team from what I can see, because I can't really remember who the biggest tag team was main roster-wise. I don't know if it'd be too soon to call the Usos the biggest tag team main roster-wise.
That'd be a Dylan question.
Yeah. I mean, it was the Usos and New Day. I mean, they were just dominating the tag division. That's all that mattered.
Which we've seen 100 times, but
they were good.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they were good matches, but we've just seen it 100 times.
Yep.
So you built them up, and 6 weeks later, they no longer have the titles. But like Dylan said, at the same time, I mean, you've been building AOP up to be monsters. I mean,
they can't lose.
Yeah, they can't take a loss here.
They can't lose. And they need crowd reaction too, and I think this will help.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear anybody talk about, well, just do a count out finish. Like, no, I don't want to hear anybody talk about that. That should not happen at takeovers, pay per views, or anything. So I'm
the
glad
only way it would have worked
that.
If it was a double count out. That's the only way you could do a count out finish. But that would have
been done. Triple H doesn't love doing them.
No. No.
That's a disappointment in my eyes if they ever do that, especially at a takeover. So just kind of a lose-lose situation, just kind of just wrong timing to have this match, but I understand why they did. I guess from here, we just got to see how long AOP goes. If they lose their title in 6 weeks, which, I mean, Kyle knows the answer by now, but I don't want him to spoil it for me, then, you know, maybe you start putting concern on the tag division, but you know, if they have a lengthy reign, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, there's more than 6 weeks to the next takeover at least, so they are champions for at least 6 weeks.
Okay.
So, right. So yeah, we got some banger stuff with AOP, I believe, coming soon, if I remember the timeline correct. But, yeah, like I said, I thought they grew up in this match, and that's what we really wanted to see. As they sold, too, I thought they sold very well for DIY. And Paul Ellery does feel like a big deal for them, you know, doing the whole strategy and everything. But I'll start with the grading. I give it 3.7. Dylan, what did you give it?
Yeah, I'm at a 3.5.
All right, Christian, go ahead.
I'm the highest one here. I'm at a 3.9.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I really enjoyed it. As we move on. So out of nowhere, you know, we're starting to get to the next match. Seth Rollins calls out Triple H in the midst of their feud. Hunter comes to the stage as he sends out security and walks away. Rollins gets taken by security. I loved every single second of this, Dylan. Everything.
Yeah, I mean, this was at a time where Triple H was a heel on WWE TV, but anytime he was shown on NXT TV, he was like God.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways, like this was his house. So to see Triple H called out and letting those worlds kind of blur a little bit, very much enjoyed, because you know obviously Triple H is the heel in that feud, so portraying him as somewhat of a heel on NXT TV was definitely unique. Loved it.
Christian, any thoughts?
I thought Seth Rollins was amazing in this segment.
Oh, he was.
He also was cut in like while the commentators were talking, so it looked super unplanned, which I loved.
Yeah, if you look closely when they're showing the commentators, you can see Seth Rollins getting in the ring.
Yeah, you see him running in, sliding.
See what I mean by the seer of Seth Rollins? Just saying. But we move on. Asuka defends her NXT Women's title against Nikki Cross, Billie Kay, and Peyton Royce. Their pre-match video package, I thought, was perfection. Nikki looks awesome. Commentary putting over that the Iconics have been best friends since they were teenagers. Puts over the fact that it doesn't matter who wins as long as one of them possesses it, because of how much they trust each other, plus the presence of Asuka. This had a big fight feel, in my opinion, especially with the bill going in. Can it live up to the hype? Let's see. Smart strategy by Royce and Billy, letting Cross and Asuka beat each other down, then come in and take the scraps. But Asuka reverses, taking both Iconics down with a bulldog clothesline combination. Cross comes back, rolling forearm by Billy. Double German suplex by Asuka, rocked. They kept building towards the Cross-Asuka brawl and finally got it as they pummeled each other down. Reverse stunner from Cross, swing neckbreaker to the floor was great. Double crossbody by Cross as she is rolling. Royce finally counters, throws Nikki neck first into the guard railing, which is nasty. Iconics and Cross fight across the ramp. Double suplex through the table from the announcer's table. Now they go to isolate the Empress. It's just super smart booking here, I thought. Running knee from the chicken wing position as Royce goes for the cover. Chicken wing, as Dylan immediately gets hungry. Friends since they were kids. I think it's very compelling story that the Iconics just don't care who wins as long as one of them has it. You know, they kept mentioning their past, and I really think it added to the potential moment. A back kick into a vertebraker for a near fall was amazing. Asuka fights back, gets Billy out of the ring. She absolutely decks Royce with a wicked kick out of nowhere, and Asuka retains the title. It could have gone another minute or two, but I do like how they sold the vicious kicks from Asuka, as Peyton sold it like death. I thought she did great. The match was fast-paced. So many things going on. As you could tell, the creative team had massive plans for Nikki Cross. The match was solid. I thought the story was definitely the best part, like the first match. The Iconics doing anything for each other to win, I thought was great. Them delaying the Cross-Asuka showdown to make you salivate for it, also great. Also, NXT did a great job showcasing how crazy Nikki is, but Asuka again has the deck stacked against her, and this checked every box for me. Maybe they could have done a different ending, but they started playing like her with like a wicked back kick out of nowhere as one of her finishers, so I didn't mind it as much. But Christian, what'd you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this match, especially being a fatal four-way match. I think it needed to be fast-paced like it was, because a slow fatal four-way match just wouldn't have worked. There would have been a lot of ring space taken up, and I think it would have got clunky if it had been slow. So the fast pace makes sense. My favorite part of this whole match the whole time wasn't even Asuka, who I've told you guys I absolutely love and adore.
It was Nikki Cross.
No.
No,
no, it was not Nikki Cross. It was the Iconics. That was my favorite part. Just the whole story with them. I think that was very well done. I think personally that was the best part of the match besides the actual match itself. I was digging what they were doing, because we've seen this before where you see a tag team entering a singles type match where everybody's for themselves and they're both trying to win the gold, and they say going in, "Oh, I got your back," and then Shawn Michaels super kicks Triple H in the face.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they didn't do that, because it was something different. They were truly trying to work for each other. I thought that was cool, and I like how they kept on bringing up their past and how long they've been doing this together. I thought that was very well done. That was my favorite part. And Asuka wins a fatal four-way match with the deck stacked against her, everybody going after her.
I think it just adds to truly how dominant of a champion she is. I thought a lot of good things happened here, and the match itself was pretty good.
Needed to be chaotic. This needed to go other places than the ring, and it did. Also, Billie Kay was pretty green at this time, and it was completely fine because Peyton Royce did a lot of the offense. It was just super smart, I think, because I also think they have plans for Billie Kay, but they didn't want to, like, obviously do a one-on-one with her. So Peyton Royce kind of taking some of that from her, I think, was very smart, Dylan.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if Asuka doesn't have a strong enough story to have a true one-on-one and a takeover, something like this makes perfect sense. You know,
and they protected the hell out of Nikki Cross. Go on.
Yeah, yeah. So that, you know, obviously that shows that they wanted something with Nikki Cross as a babyface, as that crazy character or whatever, whatever they want her to be. I don't know. And then, you know, the Iconics being relatively new, like you said, Billie Kay's pretty green here. I thought it was a cool way to get Asuka a pretty big title defense. Let her run through three members of the roster. And yeah, I thought it checked all the boxes. Asuka looks great. Nikki Cross, like Kyle said, is protected, so that saves future plans for her, maybe. So a lot of good stuff happened here. Really, really no complaints. Even the runtime, 10 minutes, not mad about it.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't going to go an hour or anything like that. I think if it dragged out a little bit, you would have seen some of the flaws from someone like Billie Kay. So I think the 10-minute run was perfect. Mm-hmm. And it was exactly everything it needed to be. And I wanted this match to be good so badly going in because I loved the build. That pre-match video package is one of my all-time favorites. I thought it was awesome. But Dylan, we'll start with you. Great. What'd you give it out of 5?
Yeah, I'm at an even 3.
Alrighty. Go ahead, Christian.
Well, damn, I'm really high then. I'm at a 3.8.
Yeah, I'm at a 3.5, so I'm kind of in the middle of you guys. But before we move on, we see Tyler Bate, the first NXT UK champion, as he was only 20 years old here. Isn't that insane?
Wow.
But we move on to the main event. Bobby Roode challenges Shinsuke Nakamura for the NXT title. Roode's entrance was glorious. Nakamura's is great as always. This had a mega fight feel as the crowd was split 50-50. Nice set of chain wrestling early. Sharp elbow to the jaw by Roode. Opened up his offense working on the left arm. Nakamura reverses with a kick and a side slam, but Roode is not letting the champion get going. The fight spills to the outside, knee to the ribs with Shinsuke. He eats a steel steps, getting tossed from the top rope. Tossing the King of Strong Style against the steel steps twice. The champ is really favoring his neck. Love how commentary alluded to Bobby using a lot of snap in his offense. Love that part. A double axe handle to the top for a near fall. Elbows, knees are dropped by Bobby. Has a very old school offense, which slows down the pace. But did you guys see him throw Nakamura's hair? Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great visual. Nakamura counters the corner splash with a rolling knee right to the ribs, which is nasty. Exploder suplex almost broke Roode's neck. Roode suckers Nakamura in for a backstabber for a near fall. Front suplex with a diving kick. Roode almost got a roll-up victory, but the ref sees the feet on the ropes. Loved how even this match is at this point. Everything is crisp, has a purpose. Sliding knee for a two count. Nakamura really messes up his knee on the outside. Kinshasa, but can't get the cover because of his left knee. Great story telling there. Medical checks on him. Glorious DDT. And the moment when Shinsuke kicked out was magical. Did you see Roode's face? Dude, he sold that beautifully. Half grab by Roode as Matt Bloom comes to the ring. And he was the interim general manager because William Regal was not there that night. So I'm glad commentary said that. Triangle by the champ. Reverse into another glorious DDT. 1, 2, 3. And we have a new NXT champion. Much like the tag match, do you try and establish your new champ or give it to the hot name? I thought it was the right call here.
Rude was one of the hottest wrestlers at this time, and that gimmick was just on fire. Was so happy for him. And Shinsuke looked good in loss here, I thought, because, you know, he can blame it on the knee, the injury, whatever. The matchup was slow pace, but this was physical. Bobby basically worked a New Japan Pro Wrestling match. A lot of old school moves, basic punches, knees, kicks, elbows, chops, but worked. Rude took every advantage possible to win, and he was able to do it. Did you guys see his reaction when he won? He finally made it to WWE, and he's on top of the world. So happy for him. Another little detail I loved was the facial expressions. This had drama, had extra stuff like the doctors, but it never felt overbooked. This was a banger, I thought. Old school fight, and Bobby Roode is the new NXT champion. Dylan, what'd you think?
Yeah, this match ran 27 minutes.
Did it really?
Yeah, 27 minutes. Ooh. By far the longest match of the night. And man, it was physical. This was a fight at a lot of times. It was a great, great wrestling match. Like you said, definitely similar situation to the tag titles. While DIY, I feel like could have or maybe should have won the tag. I mean, Bobby Roode had to win this.
There was
no other outcome here. Yeah. And, you know, like we said earlier, you're not going to do some screwy double count out or you know, referee stoppage or anything. Like you're Bobby Roode's going to pin Shinsuke and he's going to earn that. And I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything to complain about. This was a lot of fun.
And it left a lot of meat on the bone too, if they wanted to come back to this hint. But Christian, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you guys basically said it best. Right winner, just due to the situation. Shinsuke can play it off as, oh, you know, I was injured, I hurt my knee, couldn't go anymore. You won that way, whatever. So, yeah, there's definitely more to this, I would assume. Don't tell me. I want to find out myself.
Mm-hmm.
And these two are, at the time, probably two of the top pro wrestlers in the world. So this match wasn't going to miss either way. Whether it was hard-hitting, slow-paced, fast-paced, it was going to be good no matter what. We weren't let down. Not a lot to complain about here. Just a great pro wrestling match with a great story and a good finish and a good winner. So,
what did you grade it out of 5?
I gave it a 4-4.
All right, Dylan, go ahead.
I'm at a 4-3.
I am at a 4-4 as well, as we cap off NXT TakeOver San Antonio. This was a very interesting card. I'm just looking up something real quick. Before there is a new signing coming to a Black and Gold, but I just wanted to get the timeline when he did come back. But I'm actually going to start here really quick with my thoughts, and then we'll get to the rest of the guys' thoughts. My match of the night, personally, was Rude versus Nakamura. I think that's really the only way that you can go, even though the second match I thought was fantastic. I gave the overall night, it's either 7.9 or 8. I'm going to go 8. This was not the strongest takeover. They didn't have a lot of time to transition from Toronto to here, which was understandable. And there's 4 people on this card that this was their first takeover. So obviously they wanted to showcase some new talent, and you can't be wrong. It's not wrong for doing that. There was still a lot of great action. I thought the stories that they told in 6 weeks were still phenomenal. It was very well produced, written pretty well, again, but, like I said, this one will probably stand out as one of the weaker ones, but it's still a great show. Because when you do, like, if Vince had a bad pay-per-view, you're like, oh my God, it was bad. But this didn't feel like a bad show to me. It was, you know, it didn't live up to Toronto or maybe some of the big ones, and Dylan knows what's coming up soon. You know, we're getting pretty close to maybe something like New Orleans. But we got a lot of great stuff on the horizon with NXT. And they made some stars tonight with the AOP. Sanity is going to be a very big deal. I'm going to say it. Sanity is going to be a mainstay here.
So keep your eye on that. We actually have a new signing to WWE or to NXT, the Black and Gold. Christian, please welcome Drew McIntyre to NXT Black and Gold. So right. he will be kicking off his debut very soon. But we'll get into you, Dylan. A great out of 10 match of the night, your overall thoughts.
Yeah, match of the night, I'm going to give it to the main event. It was obviously Shinsuke and Rude. I thought they tore the house down. Overall, yeah, it wasn't the strongest takeover. I wish there would have been more of a build. But given only a six-week turnaround, yeah, it kind of is what it is. But
just WWE scheduling. But
yeah, that being said, though, I feel like the night was a success.
Mm-hmm.
Everything had a purpose, and that's kind of – that's the era of takeovers that we're in and that we're going to continue to see, is that there's no wasted movement on takeovers. Yep. So even with only a 6 week turnaround, you know, Triple H is going to put on the best card that he can. That makes sense. And everything here made sense and it furthered other things. So I don't really have much to complain about. Also, fun fact, Bobby Roode holding up that big Block X NXT title. He's the last person to hold that title. That title gets redesigned very soon.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. Score out of 10, I'm going to go 7-8. Still a very good show. Still rewatchable, but I've seen better and we're about to see better.
Whew. Yeah, we're not quite to the heyday, but you'll know it when you see it. Whew. But Christian, what'd you think?
Yeah, I gave the overall night just an 8. Flat 8 with my match of the night being the main event as well. I think that's pretty consensus between us three. I like this show. I think it's kind of a show more meant to show what the future direction is going to be. This card, just judging by if you looked at it before, was never going to light the world on fire. I don't think it was meant to. Like you guys said, it's hard to do a 6 week turnaround. We see it in current day WWE. Sometimes the turnaround isn't as great as we'd want it to be sometimes, but Triple H shows are still good. This one was still good. I think he did a good job with, you know, the short notice that he was having another takeover right after he just had one. So, you know, he tried. I feel like the wrestlers did their best. And this was for future direction, I think. So,
but nothing wrong with it. I thought Roddy looked really good in his takeover debut, too. You can tell that there's definitely plans for him, and there is. You know, they tried to make Authors of Pain, but obviously Bobby Roode was the big star coming out of this. But I thought everyone performed very well. And that is it for TakeOver San Antonio, as Drew McIntyre, we'll have to see what awaits for him. But tell me, Mo in the week, Dylan, what do you got?
All right, my WM over the week goes to WWE. So on Raw this week, like I mentioned, Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark defeated Caden Carter and Katana Chance in a tag team match. After the match, Damage Control said that next week on Raw, Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark would get a title match. What Michael Cole tried to mention multiple times, but what seemed to be overlooked in the segment was that the Kabuki Warriors have a title defense, or had a title defense, scheduled already for NXT that week. So, and that left a lot of NXT officials very upset. Now, I get it. This isn't the Black and Gold era of NXT, but Kyle, you even got to admit, if you want to make the guys and girls at this current generations of NXT feel important, feel like that's a legitimate brand, you can't overlook it, right? You can't just go straight to next week and be like, hey, next week we're going to have a title match. It's like, well, what if you're not champions? You know?
Hey, my brand was destroyed, so they can get some heat towards them.
But anyway, yeah, I just thought it was you know, the oversight, I guess, of the NXT match. Is why this is my dummy moment.
This is news to me. I didn't even know they had a match on NXT. So
yeah, I didn't either.
They didn't.
Absolutely no idea.
Now,
but
obviously they walked out as champions still. But
yeah,
but they did want to build towards this match. I get it. Dude, Zoe Stark has literally everything you look for besides like a character. Dude, she has everything, man. She's a great pro wrestler. She's clean. She's got a great move set. She's got a great look. But damn, man, they're trying. I mean, they're really trying with her and Shayna. So I'm really hoping she's got some crowd reaction because she can be a top tier star in WWE. But what do you got, Christian, this week?
All right, so half my demo will always go to Tony Khan. The other half will go to AEW. I don't know if you guys caught it, but they have redone all their graphics and stuff, and not my favorite. I prefer the old one. I think the like transition screen you get when they go to replay is kind of corny. I don't know. Maybe I'm just because I got really used to the other one. Just not a fan of this one. It looks a little gimmicky to me. The color scheme's a little bit off for me, so I don't know. I just think a lot of the graphics and logos and colors they chose just doesn't really fit them.
It definitely my opinion, though.
It
definitely wasn't as bad as 2.0. No, they wanted it to look clean, but I also think they wanted to have maybe like a an old school kind of look. So I think they did, and I think the song for Dynamite is so much better than the old one. It's a little bit heavier. I really enjoy it. I mean, it's not my personal favorite, but I don't know if it's as bad as people are saying it is, Dylan.
I mean, isn't this like the third or fourth somewhat rebranding of Dynamite since the company's even started?
Yeah.
I feel like they've done two or three just in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just saying.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm not a fan of it personally.
I guess we'll see.
I like the original Dynamite stuff. Like, I don't know why it ever changed.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll wait and see what happens. So half of mine goes to Vince, but the other half goes to New Japan Pro Wrestling. If things in New Japan were not bad enough after losing most of their top-end talent, Jack Perry defeated one of their bright young stars in Shota Umino, or Shooter Umino, as I like to call him, to advance in the New Japan Cup. Perry also aligned himself with what many fans of the product call the worst stable in the company and one of the worst in history, that House of Torture, taking the t-shirt from Evil. For those who are not aware, other members include Ren Narita, Sho, and Dick Togo, to name a few. I believe that, of course, Dylan got a laugh out of that. I believe this move was to make Jack Perry a big heel. And if so, I understand what they're trying to do. But this will not make the stable any more popular. And even though I think it's awful to say, Jack Perry will never be able to recover from the CM Punk All-In stuff. He's just never going to recover from it. I know they probably got plans for him, maybe with the Young Bucks and Dynamite, you know, as the heel and maybe a story with them. I just don't think he's going to recover from this, and it sucks to say. New Japan has Matt Riddle's Nick Nemeth as champions, if that tells you anything about the promotion right now. And I really hope they can turn it around, because this, since I've been a pro wrestling fan, has probably been their worst state. So, Christian,
wow. Adolf.
Yeah, New Japan's definitely... they've taken a bad U-turn. I'm not quite sure what they were thinking the other night with that match decision being only 8 minutes as well. And they kind of just buried one of their top-end young talents. So, yeah, things are a little bit of struggle for New Japan right now. Hopefully they can get back to their ways. But they're definitely missing three big names right now.
And The 8 minute match that he's referring to is Matt Riddle beat Tanahashi in 8 minutes. I mean, it was good, but you know, it could have went maybe 13.
And Tanahashi?
Tanahashi. Like, that's like John Cena is Tanahashi to them.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But Dylan, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we have to remember sometimes that New Japan's in this kind of in the NFL they call it a rebuilding.
Yeah.
Or in sports, they call it rebuilding. That's kind of what New Japan is doing right now. I mean, they lost Kenny Omega, obviously, when AEW launched, and the Bucks, and all the names that they had.
Osprey.
All the Bullet Club members that fucking went to AEW right away, and then Osprey recently, and then Okada, who was, like, the guy.
Yeah.
He was Peyton Manning, basically.
Yeah, so it's like they're just in this transitional phase. I think they're experimenting. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, just trying to see what works. But they're also trying to have some more, I guess, established names be in the limelight. Like you mentioned, Nick Nemeth is already a champion. But give it time. I think they're going to build something. And I mean, Kyle has been wanting them to build younger talent up for years. And now they're going to be in a position where they're going to be forced to, because Nemeth is not going to be, you know, that guy for 10, 12 years.
And he's signed with TNA.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and he signed with TNA. And then, obviously, Riddle, he's not the guy you're building a promotion around or a whole company around. So I think they'll get it going. Give it about a year or so.
Yeah, I mean, you also have to think, like, can David Finlay be that guy to take him to the next step? I think it could it. They got some, you know, they do have some young talent. Was show, and they still have some veterans like Tetsuya Naito. Turning evil heel was absolutely the wrong decision, but they have guys like Elf and Tasma, who's great.
There's still some Jeff Cobb. Good on that roster.
Yeah, Jeff Cobb is fantastic, but
I have to utilize them now.
Yeah. Now you gotta use them, and Wrestle Kingdom next year is going to be very interesting, so I'm very looking forward to see what they do for that big show. Dylan, can you tell us what we're doing next week?
Next week we're drafting, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so several months ago, we fantasy drafted our own companies.
That was a year and a half ago.
It was not a year and a half ago.
Definitely was, because we did it in 2022, because that's when I just first started coming on the show, Dylan.
Was it that long ago?
I don't think it was that long ago. Anyway, we'll have to review the footage. Anyway... that was a lot of fun to do, so we decided to kind of celebrate WWE dropping 2K24 this week that we would draft for our universe mode. So yeah. Kyle's going to go over all the logistics when we get to that point. Yeah. But yeah, basically we're going to be drafting for those brands, for those shows, and whatever you drafted, you have to put in the game. And then I guess over the course of several weeks, or maybe over the course of the year, we'll just give random updates,
you know,
who's our champions and things like that. So it's going to be a very interactive, ongoing segment as well. So a lot of fun. Also gives us an excuse to dive into the new game, which we're all pretty excited for.
And really quick, Kyle's first three picks are in. It is Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, and Shayna Baszler.
That is not true. But before we go, guys, we are going to determine what brands we are and what picks we have for next week. So, Christian, can you give me a number out of three?
Wow.
With three. Did you hear me?
No, I didn't. Sorry.
I said I'll go with three.
All right. Dylan, pick one or two.
One.
All right. So the winner is... two. That was okay. So me. Okay. So I get to pick my brand first, and I will take a NXT Black and Gold. So Dylan, pick number one through two.
One through two. Two.
All right. And it is two. It is. All right. Dylan, SmackDown or Raw?
Raw.
All right, Christian, you get SmackDown, my friend.
That's what I wanted anyway, so...
Alrighty. Dylan, give me a number one out of three.
Really?
Yeah!
Three.
Alright, Christian.
One, I'm gonna go with one.
Alright, one it is. Christian, you will have the first pick in the draft. Oh. Alright, Dylan, one or two?
Two.
Two it is. All right. Dylan, you will get the second pick, and I will get the third pick in a snake draft rules. So, again, just to clarify, I'm Black and Gold. Dylan is Raw. Christian is SmackDown. And Christian is now on the clock for the draft next week.
Big board's ready.
Yeah, so I think, come on. Like it's any fucking shock. Who are you going to take? first.
Maybe Roman. Who knows, man? Who knows? But we'll have all the logistics, all the rules.
Roman's not going first round. I guarantee it with us three.
No, he's definitely not going mine. But,
spoiler alert, there are three names that are being considered for the number one overall pick.
All right, Christian. So very interesting stuff. As Dylan gets the second pick, and I will be getting 3 and 4. But appreciate everyone listening to this point. I think next week's going to be a lot of fun. I think we had a great time reviewing San Antonio as well. We got some really cool stuff on the horizon with Mania season coming. So we will catch everyone next week as we are on the road to WrestleMania, boys.
Yes, sir.